This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Come on, the room. Come on. We call it
the place to be.
The place to be, yes.
The place to be.
Then I shall be.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
It is contagious. It is the place to be, and we are live each and every Monday.
To do worse than Josh Richard.
Would you still roll if we couldn't see the sun rising off the shore of Thailand? Would you ride then if I wasn't driving? If I wasn't a 8-figure nigga by the name of Jigga, would you come around me? Would you clown me?
Place to Be Nation, how the fuck are you? JT, just Rosera coming at you here live on this Monday evening. It's a big night, of course, the Raw 25th anniversary special rolling in the background, but we are rolling hot and heavy here on the Place to Be podcast. I'm going to go ahead and bring in my PIC of almost 7 years. That's Scott Criscola. Scott, how are you?
Good evening, JR. We are fired up. We got a big weekend ahead of us, you and I. Welcome, everyone, to the longest-running episodic motherfucking gold standard. And that is episode 479 of the Place B podcast. Yeah, Raw 25 fired up. They're at the Manhattan Center tonight. They're also at the Barclays Center in Brooklyn. Stone Cold's already come out. Interesting today, JR. The Empire State Building is all red in honor of Raw tonight. So they did a press conference earlier today with Make-A-Wish, and it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So yeah, big night. But we are not in 2018. We are back pre-Raw.
Mm-hmm.
To 1987. But before we dive into the show, JR, we've got a very special third member of the team tonight, a debut tonight.
Yeah, he was on an episode of the Place to Be podcast before, but he's never done a vintage vault. He was, of course, on our Halloween special. He stopped by to trick or treat. He is the one, the only, the host of the wonderful podcast on the PWO feed, Greetings from Allentown. That is the one and only Mr. Peter Winson. Peter, how are you?
I am well, and if you go back and you listen to that Halloween episode, you'll notice that I'm the one guest who completely blew the bit from the word go. Because I just jumped right in and just wanted to get a whole bunch of stuff in and all that. But yeah, I'm playing hurt. I have a bit of a sore throat. I think I might sound like I have a cold, and plus I got 12 stitches in my thumb. From a hand injury. It might have been a sympathy hand injury for Tom Brady. Actually, that didn't happen. But I actually did cut my hand last week feeding my cat, who is named Brady. So there is a kind of a connection.
I'm already regretting all of this.
this open has gone on way too long. I thought we were going to censor you.
It was better when we were here making fun of Boston and Massachusetts cities a few weeks ago. And now we got to have this Jamoke on to talk wrestling with us.
Where do you live, near Peabody?
Winchester.
Did I nail almost all of them, Peter? I think I got a lot of them, right? That was off the top of my head, pretty much.
Got just about all of them, except for Woburn, where I grew up, and Draket, where I live, which really doesn't sound funny at all when you say it. So.
Yeah,
I've never heard of Draket.
We're up on the New Hampshire.
I know where Woburn is, but I've never heard of Draket.
We're next to Lowell. The legend goes that Shawn Michaels' smile from that Lowell Raw is buried somewhere in town, and I'm looking for, like, it's a mad world or something.
Oh, what a great movie. Excellent reference, my friend.
Oh, boy. All right. It's great to have you here, Peter. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming, so we'll talk to you later.
Yeah. Now we're going to get this. Now we can get the show done in 30 minutes to get back to Raw. Now.
All right.
Well, JR, we have concluded our 5-episode gauntlet of Madison Square Garden house shows. We're going a little bit west tonight, not too far west, to Hershey Park Arena in Hershey, Pennsylvania, for the October 3rd, 1987 episode of Saturday Night's Main Event. We haven't been on Saturday's Main Event since, May?
Mm-hmm.
Right after WrestleMania 3. They took the summer off, as they normally do, and then kick in. Right, as Saturday Night Live gets started, they get their first few episodes in, and then Vince gets his in. So here we go. Now, this was taped. This was actually taped, JR, 2 days after our last house show.
Oh.
Our last house show was on September 21st, and they taped this on Wednesday night the 23rd and aired it on Saturday night the 3rd. So, all right. The roster live on this Saturday night was in three towns, as normal. Vince broke it up into threes. And Peter, to kind of break in here, I'm going to read the three house shows to you and tell me which one you think is what you think is the best, because I have full results from our man Graham Cawthon at thehistoryofwwe.com, and JR, you think as well.
Okay.
They were all over the country. One group was at the Convention Center in Dallas, Texas, or as the guy that was just on Raw would say, Dallas, Texas. 2,777, so not a huge crowd. Here's your card. Sam Houston pinned Barry Horowitz. Boris Peter's like, oh, that's an F.
No, that's not the best one. Yep.
No. Boris Zukov pinned David Samurai. Oh, it really isn't. Well, there was only 2,000 because I couldn't fit his ass in there. So,
did you say Boris twice? Does he have two matches?
No, I said Sam Houston pinned Barry Horowitz, and then Boris Zukov pinned David Samurai. I wouldn't really confuse Barry Horowitz's nice coif mullet. A guy named we won't say him. This newcomer that came in from World Class pinned Shadow Number One. We'll Scott talk more Casey. About it down the line. Don't ask Scott Casey. A guy that wears face paint.
Oh, okay.
We'll get to him later. We'll get to him down the line. Rick Rude defeated Coco Beware. George Steele defeated Danny Davis. Sensational Sherry successfully defended the women's title against Velvet McIntyre. The Killer Bees defeated the Hart Foundation via DQ in a tag title match. Paul Orndorff defeated King Kong Bundy, a familiar match we'll talk about later, in an old-fashioned whipping match. And the main event, Hulk Hogan successfully defended the world title against the King Harley Race. That was in Dallas. Roster number two was at McNichols Arena in Denver. Only 1,200 for this show. That's not good. But there must have been bad weather or something, because it says Coco Beware. This must have been the same group that maybe moved over from Dallas, because it says Coco Beware, Rick Rude, Hercules, George Steele, and Ron Bass were no-shows because their plane was delayed.
Yeah. Probably, so, yeah. They're probably supposed to shoot up to Denver.
Yeah, I figured as much. So here's the card. Rip Oliver pinned C.V. Offey. Davey Boy Smith pinned fought Dino Bravo to a draw.
So I think we found the card for the next Greetings from Allentown.
I know. Hacksaw Jim Duggan defeated Killer Khan. Brutus Beefcake beat Greg Valentine. Ted DiBiase pinned the Junkyard Dog. Prior to the bout, DiBiase gave the JYD $500 to take the night off.
Which he literally then blew.
On pork rinds and cocaine. No, but the JYD gave the money to the crowd instead. Demolition defeated Jim Powers and Laney Poffo. Greg Valentine pinned Scott Casey. So Greg Valentine fought twice that night. Must have been covering for somebody else. And Brutus Beefcake, who was subbing for Jake Roberts, pinned the Honky Tonk Man in a non-title match. There's your McNichols Arena show.
I'm hoping they gave refunds to that one.
I know. Well, here's the third show, and I know, Peter, you're going to vote for this one because it was at the Boston Garden.
Yeah.
500 at the Garden, which is really not that great a crowd. And, of course, Gorilla Monsoon and your roommate, the Duke. The Duke. I live in Woburn. here's your card. Jerry Allen defeated Jerry Allen defeated the Duke via DQ at 7:23 when Doherty knocked down the referee with an elbow. So he wrestled the match and probably hopped over the ropes and just sat at the table.
Double threat.
Threat. Dan Spivey, or as the awesome Duke would say, Spivey, pinned SD Jones with a neck breaker. Butch Reed pinned superstar Billy Graham with his feet on the ropes after Graham punched Slick off the ring apron. Don Morocco pinned Cowboy Bob Orton after reversing Orton's roll-up attempt into one of his own. Brady Boone pinned Jose Estrada by reversing a backdrop attempt into a roll-up. Mr. Bam Bam Bigelow, who we've talked about, pinned Sika with a slingshot splash after Sika ran into the corner. Nikolai Volkoff pinned Outback Jack with a rolling gut wrench into a bridge. The Macho Man Randy Savage pinned Hercules with a reverse roll-up. And in the main event, the Islanders defeated Strikeforce when Haku, the illegal man, pinned Santana. Tito Santana with a diving headbutt as Santana had the figure four applied on Tama.
Mm, we'll see something similar to that next week.
We will, indeed. So what do you think, Peter? If you had paid I know what card you'd be going to, so better anyway.
Boston sounds... Boston would definitely be the easiest commute for me because I could just take the train home afterwards. But I'm going to go with the Dallas one just simply for Hogan. On that, because I don't know, that Denver one sounded like the dregs, and there was to Boston's credit though, there was a lot of jobber matches on that one that I think would have been interesting to see, and they had SD Jones as well. So
right, and yeah. Boston was the one house show that didn't have any belts because two of the three were in Dallas, and the other one was in Denver. So there were no title matches at the Boston Garden Show either. So so there's where the roster was: Dallas, Denver, and Boston.
He's gonna take the train because it's a parking lot out on Canal Street.
Going over to
hey, what are the odds, by the way? Peter and I were at the same Celtics game last week. Pretty funny.
Oh, really?
Yeah. We realized it was like 3 minutes to go in the game, so we didn't get to meet up or anything. But it's
Rosero was downstairs with the hoi polloi down there. I'm up in the last row of 317 next to the pillars, six out from the back. So
I was right under him, though. I mean, it was like two sections and a lot of rows, but I was like pretty much right under him.
I'm a man of the people.
You wouldn't have taken Ted DiBiase's money.
No.
All right. So there's your three cards. JR, what do we have for notes?
From the Greeny Facts, since the 9/21/87 MSG House Show, The Princess Bride was released, open in U.S. theaters, starring Andre the Giant. And on the 9/26/87, Superstars, Craig DeGeorge conducted an interview with the Intercontinental Champion Honky Tonk Man and Jimmy Hart, in which Randy Savage interrupted Honky, listing 10 reasons why he was the greatest Intercontinental Champion of all time. Savage then left the interview platform, went to the ring to challenge Honky, but the champ declined, saying he wasn't dressed to wrestle. And we also had the return of Jim Duggan defeating Terry Gibbs at 224, his first TV appearance since June. Of course, that's when he got busted out on the turnpike with the coke and the Iron Sheik. So Duggan is back in town, having returned, paid his penance, and now back on TV.
Okay. All right. Before we begin, there are some dark matches on this evening. Let's hear what we have. Lanny Poffo pinned Steve Lombardi. Scott Casey. Speaking of the devil, pinned Tiger Lee Chung.
Oh, boy.
The Rougeaus fought Greg Valentine and Dino Bravo to a draw. Who was booking this company that thought that Dino Bravo would be great doing draws? I mean, really.
Got it.
I think we should do a greetings from Dino Bravo's house.
That was a match we watched last week, right? That Rougeaus and Dream Team. Was that
yes.
last week's?
Yep.
Yeah. I got all jumbled in my head now. Yeah, that was not very good. I feel bad for
Dom fans. Morocco pinned Bob Orton Jr., so that feud's still fired up. Yeah. Wonder if Morocco's gotten his shirt off yet. And Ted DiBiase pinned Hillbilly Jim with a power slam and hooking the tights, or I guess overalls, for leverage. Mm. So that was the dark matches in Hershey. All right, JR, let's dive in.
All right.
What do we got to open with?
Finally back here on NBC, Force Nights Movement, new fall TV season, open with the promos from the Honky Tonk Man, Randy Savage, King Kong Bundy and Bobby Heenan, Sika and Mr. Fuji, and Hulk Hogan. And then we go to the arena where Vince McMahon and Bobby Heenan have the call. Jesse Ventura is still out on assignment. Of course, they welcome us in. Vince trolls Bobby for having no champions in his stable, and Bobby promises a big surprise. And then Vince tells us the Honky Tonk Man has demanded to enter first for his match tonight. Mean Gene in the back chatting with Honky and Jimmy Hart about the demands to enter first, and says it's because his fans want to see him as soon as they can. They talk about the title defense as well and are confident as always. Honky says they'll steal Liz too. And in addition to winning the match, Gene is in with Randy Savage and Miss Elizabeth, and Macho vows to take back his title and says he's in the danger zone tonight. He said danger zone like 15 times in this promo. Really trying to get that one over. Yeah.
He'd been listening to a lot of Kenny Loggins right before
that's
that.
That's right.
Yeah, and then he said, this is it. My heart to heart with Liz. All right. Honky Tonk versus Randy Savage is up next for the Intercontinental Championship. Feud raging on. Savage now fully faced, turned by the crowd. And, of course, he's really gotten fed up with Honky's bullshit. That was pretty much the whole impetus for the turn. Honky gets booed as usual. He dances and jukes his way out. Macho and Liz march out next, looking resplendent as always, now cheered by the fans. Bobby says Savage is frustrated about not having the title, but he won't be getting it back tonight. He also calls Liz gaudy, which almost gives Vince a heart attack. Savage and Honky lock up to start and jockey all around the ring. The ref forces a break. Honky lands a cheap shot punch and kicks and elbows away. Savage comes back, snaps Honky across the top rope, and the champ tries to beg off. Macho comes at him and chokes away. Savage punches, drops a stiff knee as Bobby says Liz is eye fucking Honky, basically. Hart stalks Liz and Savage comes out to break it up, but Honky follows and clobbers Macho from behind. Bobby says Liz should be active if she wants to be out here, but instead she should be home cooking instead. Savage quickly turns the tables and wipes out Honky, peppers him with right hands and misses a knee drop. Honky starts to work in some strikes and nails an elbow off the middle rope as Liz cheers Randy on. Honky goes to the floor and sashays over to Liz, but Savage comes out and makes a save again. Savage heads up top and comes flying off the floor with an axe blow. Back inside, Savage batters the champ all around the ring, gets a two on a roll-up, but Jimmy Hart gets involved to bust it up. Savage goes up top, but Jimmy yanks his foot. Savage kicks him away and then lands an axe blow off the top for two, but Jimmy makes a save again. Savage yanks Hart inside and levels him, sending him to the floor unconscious. Savage maintains control, but the Hart Foundation show up and they check on their manager. Savage pelts Honky with punches and knocks him outside, where he helps the Harts, he helps the Harts carry Jimmy off. After a break, Savage is in control, slugging away, but the Harts are back at ringside to help their stablemate. Savage punches away, but whiffs on a charge, and Honky lands in some shots. Honky shakes off a tackle and spikes Savage to the mat and unloads some right hands. Honky misses an elbow off the middle rope, and Savage heats up, working the champ aggressively and getting near falls. Honky slings Savage to the floor, the Harts beat on him and shove him back inside. Honky then drops an elbow for two, but Savage makes a comeback, slams the champ, goes up top, hits the big elbow, but Bret Hart breaks up the pin for the DQ to a loud boos. A red hot match, just as good as MSG with a bit more chaos than one we saw previously. Honky worked his ass off. Has not been carried through any of these stuff that we talked about, Scott. The Steamboat matches and both Savage matches now. He's carried his end of the bargain, the bagging. His heat is tremendous, too. I like the Dick Tease finish. It was really well done. And Savage is awesome as a face. The crowd just loves cheering him. Really, really good match. I went 3.5 on this one, Scott. Let's start with the match, guys, and then we'll get into the what happened next. Scott, give us your thoughts purely on the match itself.
Okay. Well, I was looking, as I usually do when we when we're preparing for the Saturday's main events. I'm going back to our old Vintage Vault written refreshes, which you can find on PlayStation.
And by the way, I gave 3.5 to the Savage Honky last month too. So I thought it was interesting that they actually ended the last show we did and opened the next one, which is rare for us. And I went 3.5 on both. So go ahead.
I know, which is interesting. And I'm going to get to that in a second. But yes, if you want to check out, and the opinions may change, but if you want to check it out, go to PlaySpination.com, and we did the Vintage Vault refresh written, which we posted New Year's Eve 2015, which I thought was kind of interesting. It was an interesting date to post that. And we must have recorded it that night. Or not that night, but maybe the night before. I gave it 3 stars. I originally given it 2.5, but watching it again tonight, I had to give it another half star. Not as good as the Garden show or the Garden match.
Really? You didn't like it as much?
No, I loved it. I just don't think it was as good as the Garden show, only because, again, TV constraints, the fucking commercials, and I didn't think the commentary was as good, but the match itself was different. I will say that. It was different than the Garden match, but I liked it a lot. And Honky is growing on me more than he was before we did this refresh. I still think he's a shitty wrestler, but he's learning to use what he's good at. Mm. Let Savage do the yeoman's work of the – you know, Savage was and you learned in this match almost more than you did in the Garden match. Savage is a great face in peril. Like, if you go back, there's a lot of good baby faces. Sean was like that as we get into the future. But Savage knew how to get the fucking crap kicked out of him. And like you and I always said, JR, throughout all the years we've been doing anything involving Savage, he is the best at the pathos and the emotion and getting the emotion out of the crowd, regardless of whether he was pissing them off or gaining sympathy from them. He just knew how to do it. It was one of his innate strengths that a lot of wrestlers don't have in any era. And he knew how to do that. And that was one of the best things for him as a babyface. He really knew how to get the crowd to behind him by just taking an utter beating. And you know, Honky's offense is pretty basic. Strikes, kicks, the usual, you know, heel nonsense. But it was a good pace. The Hershey crowd was scorching. I mean, they were nuclear. And, you know, the Elizabeth stuff. And Bobby was good with Vince. Not great. He's better with Gorilla. I think this match definitely missed Jesse, only because it's curious to see, because Savage was Jesse's boy when Savage was a heel. So I was curious to see, and we'll see this as time goes on, because we'll see Jesse again, obviously, how he will react to Savage as a babyface. And I think that helps. That could help or hurt the dynamic of the match. So I'm curious to see, looking ahead, when Jesse does Savage's matches, how that works out. But this match was great. Good start to the show. I'm curious if everyone thought this was where Honky finally, you know, runs out of steam and Savage just wins the belt back or something of that nature. So I was pleasantly I was surprised by that finish, because I thought watching it back then, I thought that Savage was going to win the title. But Peter, great match, 3 stars, and Savage definitely is just settled in so quickly as a babyface, like he's been one the whole time.
I always call Savage's 87 his most interesting man in the world campaign, because as he kind of evolved into a baby face. He was just so kind of fascinating because there's not one exact moment where, oh, he turns baby face like right there. It's just this beautiful gradual thing. And there's nothing like when a top heel turns baby face right in that aftermath. They had it with Piper the year before, and Piper is just red hot from that point. And then you get the same with Savage here. And yeah, there was, you know, this is really kind of a fantastic match. Of course, I'm noticing all this weird stuff, like the security for Liz. Like, why are the guys dressed up like the Super Troopers for, like, years in advance? I did like that Honky wore the tights that just said Memphis on the back of it, because with him and Jimmy Hart and Randy Savage and Liz there, it's a really strong Memphis flavor to this entire thing. And,
yeah, true.
You know, it kind of feels a little bit like that. I do think that Randy needed to give Liz some bear mace or something to deal with situations on the floor. like when Jimmy is coming after her, she just like pulls out some mace. That solves that problem in a hurry.
Right, yeah. He's got to keep going out there to help out and interrupting usually when he's in control. So you're right. I mean, it would help him, help her to have a little bit of protection out there.
Just have a little purse for that sort of thing. But Savage is such a perfect guy for this format because he can work fast, and these matches are generally short. They're not like these longer MSG house show matches. He can work fast, but still have everything mean something. Mm-hmm. Like the transition into the big elbow there happens fairly abruptly from the stuff on the outside, but with Savage, he's able to really kind of make it work. I love the notion of Bret Hart as a henchman for the Honky Tonk Man. I like this era of Bret Hart. I think he really came into his own around this time instead of just being a tag guy. Maybe
right.
The thought was, oh, yeah, we might have actually something here. And, of course, he had to be trusted to break up the pin because, you know, Anvil wasn't going to
he's never gonna
get
make
his butt
it
in there
no
in time.
Way.
He's lucky he can get over the ropes in time.
But what you guys were saying about Honky and his matches against Steamboat and MSG, and I was thinking about how, you know, he's not that bad here. I actually think that this moment here is the absolute peak Honky Tonk Man.
Right.
From, like, an overall perspective. It never gets better for him than right here. It's never hotter as a heel, I don't think. Past this moment, I think it just gradually declines and then really kind of falls off a cliff about 6 to 8 months from this point. At this point, especially with the post-match angle, which we haven't quite gotten into.
Yeah, and it's funny, too, because that's something I've been mentioning, obviously, in the last few weeks on these episodes, is, like, I'm really curious to see when that cliff comes for him. Because I always thought he was just always like that. You know, like, my memory of him was always, all right, chicken shit, begs off, whatever, blah. Like, his matches were nothing. And I've been pleasantly surprised since before WrestleMania. Like, everything we've watched of his, I really enjoyed him in. Even watching WrestleMania 3 again, I thought he was better than I ever gave him credit for against Jake. So I'm really waiting for that cliff to come, and I figure it's coming soon. But to this point, like, if he just, like, broke his neck and left or something, like you would have had a hell of a run. I know it obviously goes downhill from here. Coming soon anyway, at some point. You know, the interesting thing, too, is, Peter, because you mentioned about how the TV is, like, more condensed and he's working faster. The match itself is actually a minute longer on Science Man Event versus MSG, which surprised me. I would have thought MSG was like five or 6 minutes longer than this one was. But no, it's actually... Now, I know we get the break in here, so we probably lose a couple minutes of it. But it surprised me that it's right around within a minute or so of the MSG show. Because you're right, this one definitely felt much more frantic and everything felt more squeezed in. I guess maybe the Hearts played a role in that, perhaps?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm. I actually give this 3.5 stars. I had actually written down 3, but I tacked on an extra half because I was like, does the post-match angle count? And I'm like, yeah because definitely. Of the general importance of the whole thing.
Oh, for sure. And it pretty much plays right out of the match. It's not like it's a separate segment. I mean, the match rolls right into it.
Yeah.
And we can talk about that now. So let's get that, and then we'll get our thoughts. So after the match, the Hearts keep laying in the boots. They hold up Savage for Honky to taunt, and he slaps him. Honky then grabs his guitar, and just as he's about to level Savage, Liz jumps in front of him to protect her man. Honky demands that she moves, and when she refuses, he throws her to the ground, and just great heat on that. No one ever touches Liz. Honky dances and gyrates over her, which is just like such slime ball. Like, he doesn't throw her down. he goes over to her and starts like grinding over her, and then she leaves, and he just turns around, winds up, and just destroys Savage with a guitar. Just levels him across the head with it and bashes it. Hulk Hogan then comes out to a huge pop. He gets beat down for a minute, recovers, and then cleans house with Macho. Liz stands in the corner, and Savage actually extends his hand first, and Hogan shakes as Vince is just losing his shit. Shaking, as the kids say on Twitter. Tremendous historical moment right there is the formation, as we'll see later what they're called, but a brand new team, brand new friendship. And Peter, I thought it was interesting that Savage actually extends his hand first. You think it would be like a Hogan thing, because he's kind of the more established face and he's kind of reaching out. But I kind of like that it's Savage, because Hogan would be more, you know, he's making the save here to help out. He'd be a little more hesitant given what Savage has done to him in the past. I thought that was a nice touch of Savage is the one that extends the olive branch first.
That's true. Yeah, I hadn't really thought of it that way. I just thought of him as like concussion addled at that point from the guitar shot. So he was just willing to accept help from anybody at that point.
Mm-hmm.
They actually, I think, kind of got a lucky break with Liz's dress strap breaking, because that made it even look more like a distressing situation.
Right.
Somehow even more reprehensible there. And, you know, playing up the Liz jumping in front of all of that as this great act of bravery. It is actually where the guy in Tiananmen Square stood in front of the tank. That's where he got the idea from. I read that somewhere.
Liz... strap break as well when the tank was coming?
Yeah, more than a strap probably. But...
So would Anvil be the tank in this scenario?
Well... God. So and Liz dragging Hogan out, it made me think of like, okay, why is Hogan so readily willing to help her out? And you know, it's just the general Hogan, oh, it's a dame in distress and whatever. Right. So I have a chance to be the hero here.
Chance and to like get I a said, handy I think, after.
Yeah, well, hey, as long as they didn't film it and put it on Deadspin, that's all that really matters. But that is a good point about Savage reaching out first, and that makes him look like the better man there for, you know, rising above, because, you know, these guys have been on house shows not long before this. So, you know, it makes Savage look a little bit better by doing that. And that guitar shot, too, the noise of the crowd when mm-hmm. the guitar hits, it goes to like this hush and then gradually down to nothing. It's like one of those sounds that you hear in a stadium where it's like you're at hockey playoffs and the other team scores an overtime goal and the crowd just goes whoosh.
Just deflates.
Yeah.
And I think it's a combo, too, of like Liz getting shoved. You're reconciling that. You're booing Honky, and then boom, like now Savage gets whacked, too. And you can tell they learned from their error of Jake the Snake almost dying that they give him the breakaway wooden guitar now instead of just the you know, the hard metal thing that he used to break Jake's neck with.
Yeah.
Scott, what'd you think of the post-match? Oh, sorry. Go
ahead. No, I was just going to say, I think Jake stayed mad at Savage for getting a better guitar shot than what he got.
Yeah, this is big payback years later.
Yeah. Long game.
Well, the post-match was incredible, and that alone tells you what, what was ahead for Savage. I mean, obviously, you're officially in the big leagues now if you're sharing a stage with the big guy. So that was awesome because Savage earned it. He earned the right to be in this spot. And I got excited because, you know, Hogan hasn't really had a I don't want to say sidekick, that's not fair to Savage, but hasn't had a team up or a colleague with him on the same stage since, I don't know, Hillbilly Jim in like 84, I guess. You know, I don't know. Mr. T, you know. It was good for Savage, kept him fresh. For Hogan, kept him fresh, and then mm-hmm. Savage, obviously, this is a big moment for him. So it was huge. It was huge. And good start to the show, big time.
And we've only covered so many Saturday Night events so far, but we can track it, I guess, Scott, but it's up there, right, for Saturday Night event moments as far as
– Oh, absolutely.
What happens on that show going forward. I mean, it's going to be top 3 to 5, I would think.
I mean, the Bundy attack – the two moments for me from the one before WrestleMania 2, Bundy attacking Hogan and right. you know.
Yeah, so that so far. Like, to date, the ones we've watched, would you put it number one? Would you put it behind Bundy? Like, where would you have it?
I would probably put this number one. Yeah. I think I'd put a tie between Bundy and Mr. T getting whipped, along with the terrible fucking Jesse Kunta Kinte comment, probably tied for second. But this is huge again because, you know, this officially promoted Savage to the big leagues, to the top of the card, and I have to say, JR, it probably legitimized Honky finally. Instead of being a flunky IC champ, he was the IC champ, you know. And I think to what you said, Peter, kind of helps the Hart Foundation out a little bit too, you know, to be out there helping too. They're not just one of Jimmy's other guys, you know what I mean? They're important enough to be involved in this. Everybody wins. Nobody loses here. Everybody wins.
And this was an interesting situation where you got to see Bret Hart and Hulk Hogan share a WWF ring with each other, which we wouldn't get to see.
Oh, true, yeah.
And really, at any other point.
Is this
that
it?
I can recall.
Well, WrestleMania 9, I guess, right?
Well, they were
that was really sharing, but
two ships in the night there.
Right. All right. Any other thoughts from either of you on this one before we move on? Iconic moment. We'll talk more about it after, of course.
No, it's pretty solid. Excellent start to the show.
All right. Here we go. We go backstage. Mean Gene is with Sika and Mr. Fuji. Fuji thinks Hogan is now tired after that 3 minutes of action beforehand, and Sika is a trained savage ready to win. Gene then talks to Hogan, who says, in the jungle, it's the survival of the fittest, and he is hungrier than Sika. So that is our next match, Hulk Hogan versus Sika for the World Wrestling Federation Championship. Big title shot for Sika. Up next, we have an official reason. Of course, I thought this was just kind of an official reason to have had Hogan on site for the Savage stuff by giving him just this throwaway match. It gets him there. Gives him a reason to be there. Sika is out with Fuji and Kimchi, and then Hogan powers out to a huge pop as Vince and Bobby debate how the previous segment could affect Hulk here. Sika chokes away off the belt and kicks at Hogan. Fuji reaches in and chokes Hulk with the cane, and then Sika keeps in control with some basic strikes as Bobby compares Hulk to the chicken that Sika ate recently on TV. Sika misses a headbutt. Hulk fires up and unloads, knocking Sika to the floor. Sika returns, but Hogan's all over him with elbows and punches, but Hulk gets caught up worrying about the managers and gets knocked outside. Sika comes out, but Hogan runs him into the post. Hulk tries to use the cane by the ref, but the ref stops him, and Hogan shoves him off and stomps around the cane as we take a break. When we return, Sika comes in the ring, but Hogan dodges a charge and tries to splash, but Sika gets the knees up to slow the champ down. Sika drops a headbutt and chokes away and then goes to a nerve hold, but Hogan quickly hulks up. Sika shrugs off a shoulder block and stomps away and lands a headbutt, but Hogan blows out of the corner of the cover and hulks up again to a huge pop. Hogan then slams Sika and drops the leg for the win and then beats on Fuji and Kimchi after the bell. Pretty standard formula. Sika not really much of a threat in any way here, but it was fine. Hogan's such a force of nature at this time that like everything's fun where he's involved still at this point. Quick win for the champ, well-paced, full of energy for Hogan, and Sika just eats the quick loss. I went a star and a half, Scott, on this one.
So did I. The one shock of this match, that Hogan going for that weird splash, that was just really odd.
Yeah, yeah.
It was like very un-Hogan-like. Just a random splash that, I mean, he blew it, but it was just very strange. Otherwise, typical Hogan TV match, quick, painless. Sika's a fucking mess, though. He's fumbling all over the place. But, again, it was just a good way to get... Again, this was supposed to be Kamala.
Right.
And, of course, he walked out like an idiot. And I guess later on in an interview a couple years ago on... I think it was on Bleacher Report. He says it was the stupidest business decision he ever made in his life. Well, yeah. but, yeah, nothing great here. Just foddered for the fans to get, you know, for the... TV viewers to get a Hogan match, and like I said, a reason to have him here other than just with the Savage stuff. You might as well give him a title, might as well do a, you know, quick title match to placate the crowd, Peter. Right. But otherwise nothing more here. Typical Hogan TV win.
Yeah, I do have to point out that this is a really good match for Vince commentary and Vince comments here, particularly at the very beginning here, with two of my favorite Vince McMahon lines ever. One of them where he calls Sika, quote, the number one contender, which actually made me laugh out loud. He says that because, of course, you know, this was supposed to be Kamala, as you said, and that would actually make a lot more sense and all that. But then my favorite Vince line is when I think Sika is just in the ring and says, Sika is one of a kind. This man is a consummate savage. And like, a consummate savage? What kind of a phrase is that? Like, you hear that word, like, consummate businessman, consummate professional, a consummate savage.
He's the standard by which all savages are measured. He just comes out and does savage things in a savage way and, you know, just stays savage.
Very efficient savageness, savagosity.
He had seen so much of Macho Man earlier that he couldn't get the damn word savage out of his head. So he just kind of kept saying it over and over again with Sika out there. You know, I'm really tired of Roman Reigns' dad being shoved down our throats. People took to the ARPANET at that point to spread their disgust throughout the world. One thing, though, I did like that this is kind of a callback to the first Hogan angle mm-hmm. in this run when he saves Bob Backlund from the Samoans in kind of when Backlund was kind of surrounded on the TV show. Oh, and then Hogan's first match on Championship Wrestling was a tag with Backlund against Fuji and the great Tiger Chung Lee. So you kind of rope those guys in. But yeah, as you said, this is not really any sort of a threat here. I don't know if you noticed when Fuji got in his shot with the cane, there's a guy on the crowd in the crowd opposite hard camera who has a sign that says Hulkamania and it has the Ghostbusters like no sign through it. I thought that was interesting. And
yeah.
Guy who hates Hogan in a WWF crowd in 87. It's like, I want to talk to that guy and
he's
find
an early
out
early adopter. Yeah, he's ahead of the curve for sure.
It's like, he's like, just wait till 8 years from now. Just wait until 8 years from now.
You
buddy.
Think in 95, he's like, ugh. It's like when you the guy who gets in early on the band and everyone else catches up later. You think he's like, ugh, I've been hating Hogan since 87, whatever.
I just see him as that guy from, what was it, Billy Madison, who's writing the names on the board there, and he scratches off Billy's name because he gave him a call and apologized. Something like
Steve
that.
Steve Buscemi, right?
Yeah. So the other thing I noticed is Hogan had a black knee brace on as well.
Yeah, I saw that. I noticed that, too.
I thought, when did Hogan hurt his knee? And then I just kind of like, you know what, it really doesn't matter. But yeah, that big splash was weird. Again, continuing like what you're saying at WrestleMania 3, where he wrestled kind of a weird and stupid match, mm-hmm. like Hogan going for a big splash. It's kind of it really just stood out as just bizarre. And then the nerve hold by Sika. I just wrote like ZZZZZ in my notes for that. Formula Hogan comeback. But in the post-match, I was very amused that Hogan gave an atomic drop to Kim Chi, which I found that to be a great move to the handler there. And you could tell that Kim Chi was Steve Lombardi by the way he mounted the second rope there. It was if you study Lombardi the way he would do it before matches, it was the exact same way as Kim Chi does it. So that's jobberology right there.
It is. I thought there was something else coming with the atomic drop, Steve Lombardi tie-in or something like that, but go ahead.
One star for the match and one star for Vince's comments about Sika. So
a true professional savage. He's like a professional hitter, you know. Just
consummate savage.
He knows how to be a savage.
How do we think this card would have been different? Like, I'm curious how the Hogan-Kamala match would have went, right? Because this is pretty much like a squash, and it's quick. So if it's Kamala, who had been pretty decently protected, and he had the great feud with Hogan earlier in the year, I'm curious how that goes. Like, is it the same way? Do we get another kind of DQ finish, or does Hogan... I mean, does he beat Kamala clean and pretty much finish him off? Like, I'm really curious what the Kamala-Hogan match could have been here. Either of you guys have any thoughts on that?
I think he beats him clean. I think he maybe gets a little bit more time. But, you know, maybe something like Kamala misses the splash off the top rope and then you have the Hulk up from there. Something like that.
That's what I'm thinking. Yeah, I think it's roughly the same match, except... it goes a little longer. Maybe Kamala gets a little more offense, but I think Hogan wins regardless, and maybe a little more intrigue. But that's pretty much it. So all right, well, why don't we take a quick break?
Okay,
hustling right along here on this show, not bad so far. JR, we had incredible storyline advancement, which mm-hmm. is not ending. A little Hogan title match action, not bad so far for the first Science Main Event of the season.
There's definitely a reason we picked Science Man Event for Peter. Quick reviews, quick shows. If we did an MSG house show, Peter, how long would we be here tonight?
I don't even know how to approach those.
we just let Kelly talk us through those. Yeah, what do you think of this one so far, Peter? Enjoying it?
Oh, it's a fantastic show. It was one of the hottest starts of a Saturday Night's Main Event that they would ever have, really.
For sure. All right, let's take a break. When we return, of course, we'll talk some pop culture, and then we will roll right into the second half and see if the that part holds up as well as the first half does. So we'll be back after this.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the pro wrestling only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlayStation.com. And we offer those to you on three great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the original Place to Be podcast, as well as Main Event, Lucha Afterground, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows, as well as the Our Vantage Point podcast and Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver quick-hit pod blasts on topics old and new.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Psychology is Dead, Puro Potpourri, Stacy and Elliot's Bogus Journey, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Letters from Center Stage, Space City, an NWA Classics On Demand adventure, Through the Years, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, and much more. And on our popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, PTBN Dadcast, Go Home in a Box, NBA Team, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, Geek and Sassy, and Imaginary Stories podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to all of our feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows plus others available on PlacetoBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlacetoBeNation.com/Amazon when shopping online and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island and Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keats Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlacetoBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Hey, this is Ed Banger Thrasher, and you're listening to Where? What the fuck is it? The Place to Be podcast, so you better not miss it because I'm on it.
Once again, we can take the night in.
All right, Nation, we're back. Hope everyone's enjoying this episode of Saturday Night's Main Event. And, of course, you know, we could have had a much better show with that Hogan-Kamala match. We could have just had it all, Scott. But we didn't. We didn't have it all. But you know who does? That's Whitney Houston. She's singing that song underneath us right now. Didn't we almost have it all? The number one song in the nation this week in 1987. And, of course, that leads us into the Pop Culture Corner with Scotty C. Scott, take it away.
Thank you, JR. And yes, Whitney Houston, since this is a Saturday, the most recent Billboard Top 100 came out on this day. Mm-hmm. So today, October 3rd, 1987. Whitney with Didn't We Almost Have It All at number one. Number two, same number two from the week before, Here I Go Again by Whitesnake from their awesome album that came out. Moving up two spots, Lost in Emotion by Lisa Lisa and Cult Jam. We heard a lot of these songs were in the top 10 a couple weeks ago, so nothing unfamiliar. Bananarama with I Heard a Rumor from Disorderlies at number four. Carrie by Europe.
Isn't that the Fat Boys?
Yes. Yes, it was. Carrie by Europe, number five. Prince, You Got the Look. That was the number six. Great song.
The one from the Transformers movie?
I think so. No. And it was the duet. No? Okay. It was a duet with...
That's You Got the Touch by... Come on, it was a joke.
Oh, I haven't seen the Transformers movie in ages. Peter, it would be good for Prince to be in the Transformers.
Nah, in like 85.
That's what I mean.
I was, you know, yeah.
The movie. Yeah, Transformers, the movie. Not these new ones. You didn't watch the movie back in the '80s.
Oh no! I definitely did.
That's what I'm talking about.
Okay.
Yeah. Fuck.
Optimus Prime gets killed. Yeah. You Got the Look. Yes, Prince with Sheena Easton doing the duet, and. That was the first time we ever heard the term Hector slamming, whatever the hell that meant. Number seven, Heart with Who Will You Run To? ABC, When Smokey Sings at number eight. John Mellencamp, Paper in Fire at number nine. And at number 10, One Heartbeat by Smokey Robinson. So we have When Smokey Sings and then Smokey Does Sing later on in the countdown. So there's your top 10. Came out that day, October 3rd, 1987. And Whitney at number one with Didn't We Almost Have It All?
So just to clarify, I was referencing You Got the Touch by Stan Bush. That was the joke, was the theme song included in the Transformers movie from 1980s, which I was referencing, and not the current trash. I was talking about the old school one. So just to make sure we're all on the same page.
We're on the same page. It was not Shia LaBeouf.
Talk about the one where Rodimus Prime takes over for Optimus Prime.
Yep.
I have the clamshell VHS somewhere.
That's right. It's pretty awesome. All right. Four movies came out the day before. Nothing really earth-shattering. One of them made no money, so we're skipping that one.
Okay.
This first one made $3 million, JR, a comedy entitled Big Shots.
Big Shots.
Never heard of it. Looking forward to the description. It's probably
skip
German. All,
skip anything that doesn't make any money around here. Yeah. Big Shots. Let's see. I see 1931, 1937, 1940. Okay, here we go. It's the fourth Big Shots movie. An 11-year-old boy from Hinsdale, Illinois, named Obie Dawkins, is out fishing with his father, who tells him about the birds and the bees. All the while, Obie shows interest in his dad's watch, who eventually gives it to him. Later that morning at school, Obie's mom arrives to tell him that his dad is in the hospital. He had suffered a massive heart attack and passes away days later. Arriving at school, Obi's reminded of the way his dad took him to school when he sees a father drop off his son. Upset, Obi's... All right, I gotta stop reading this one. It's very sad. Starring Ricky Busker, Darius McCrary. I believe that's Hootie and the Blowfish, right?
Yes, it was. Okay. From Full House. So what do you call it? Family Matters. Yep. The brother.
Stop for it. See what he does, Peter? Just ignores my jokes and then plows in and makes it like...
I didn't even hear your joke.
Wrong. Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. Yes, yes.
Oh.
Darius McCrary, yes. He was in Family Matters. Yes, he was the son. He was also, we'll bring it all together. You know what movie he was in? 2007, Voice of Jazz in the movie Transformers. So there you go. He was, of course, Eddie Winslow. Stomped all over my Hootie joke. Robert Joy, Robert Prosky, Jerzy Skolimowski, Paul Winfield, Bill Hudson, Joe Seneca, a whole bunch of nothing.
It sounds like it said it's a comedy. It sounded really sad.
It is. I mean, I didn't read the rest of it. It goes on. Someone, I think, literally wrote the entire movie on this Wikipedia page. It's like 35 paragraphs summarizing this movie. Probably assuming no one will ever watch it. So,
well, that's why it only made $3 million.
There's actually a warning at the top. This article's plot summary may be too long or excessively detailed. Help improve it by removing unnecessary details. That was from October 13. We're probably the first people to visit this page since then. But
yes, eliminate the whole thing. All right, the number two movie made $3.37 million. It is called Near Dark.
Near Dark.
Doesn't say what kind of movie it is, but
it is a Western American Western horror film directed by Catherine Bigelow. One night, Caleb Colton, a young man in small town, meets a young, attractive drifter named May. Just before sunrise, she bites him on the neck and runs off. It's like the episode of South Park I watched today. The rising sun causes Caleb's flesh to smoke and burn. May arrives with a group of roaming vampires in an RV and takes him away. The most psychotic of the vampires is Severin. Started shooting on him. He wanted to kill Caleb, but May reveals that she has already turned him. The charismatic leader, Jesse Hooker, Severin Hooker, this is all coming together, reluctantly agrees to allow Caleb to remain with them for a week. Who cares? Starring Adrian Pasdar, Jenny Wright, Lance Henriksen, Bill Paxton is Dan Severin, Jeanette Goldstein, Joshua John Miller, Billy Beck, no one else.
Okay. And Beast. The number one movie of the weekend.
Yep.
The number one movie of the weekend that made $34.37 million, a comedy entitled Like Father, Like Son. I think Kirk Cameron's in this.
Oh, I hope so. It's better than any current day Kirk Cameron movies.
anything that Darius McCrary's in. If we're continuing sitcom sons. So.
Chris Hammond is a high school senior. He likes a girl in high school who happens to be dating his rival bully, Rick. His father, Jack, is a surgeon and works hard to get a promotion to the position of chief of staff at the hospital and wants his son to be a doctor as well. But Chris is not interested. Chris's friend, Clarence Trigger, has an Uncle Earl, who was bitten by a snake whilst in the desert. Earl had his leg fixed by Native Americans with a body-switching potion called the Brain Transference. This sounds like a Kirk Cameron movie. Trigger shows Chris how the Brain Transference Serum works by trying it out. And then he says, here comes Jesus, you're all going to die, on Chris's cat and dog in the pet switch. This is fucking stupid. All right, starring Kirk Cameron, Dudley Moore, Margaret Collin, Patrick O'Neill, Sean Astin, Camille Cooper, Larry Sellers, Michael Horton, Tammy David, and nobody else. What a fucking disaster this thing was. Negative reviews, particularly by Siskel and Ebert. One of the most depressingly bad comedies I've ever seen, said Ebert. Siskel was even more aggressive, calling it a cheap marketing decision masquerading as a comedy. So maybe this is where Kirk Cameron decided to go off the fucking reservation. It's after reviews like this.
Are you saying that his film career had some growing pains?
Oh!
Let's talk to Fix.
let's talk to Fix.
This, I think this absolutely led to him going out of control and starting his, whatever the fuck those ones are called. The, what
Christian movies.
Drawing a blank. What do they call it? Not Final Destination. They may as well be.
Left Behind.
Left Behind,
the
thank
Left
you.
Behind series.
Oh, those are awful.
Left Behind Final Destination.
It's the same fucking idea, right?
Yeah, everyone dies. Where everybody gets hit by a train.
Yeah, everyone dies. Everyone's predetermined to die. It's the same fucking idea between the two. But
right.
Yeah, I had to watch one of those. I took a very interesting class, actually, in college. It was the Book of Revelations and basically, what was the other one? It was like the Book of... something in Revelation. This is one of the Gospels. Who's the craziest one? Is it John?
John is the one that's kind of a little different than the other three.
Yeah.
So. Whatever. The Gospel.
It covered like that, and then it covered like the Book of Revelations. And it was pretty crazy. So we watched the movie, and it was fucking atrocious. Left Behind, the original. It was what you'd expect.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. That was it for the movies this week. All right. Baseball. It was actually the final weekend of the regular season, so a lot of these games didn't mean anything. Well, one did. One did because one division was still left undecided the final weekend of the season. That was in the American League East. The battle continued between the Tigers and Mr. Nelson's Blue Jays, and they were playing on this weekend. And on this day, Tigers won in extra innings 3-2. So going into the final day of the regular season, the Tigers had a one-game lead over Toronto in the American League East. The Yankees were 89-72. They were in fourth place. They beat the Orioles. I believe that's your team, Painter, isn't it?
They are. They weren't then, but they are now. So
okay. Well, they lost. Well, they lost 6-2 to the Yankees at the stadium. I am a Met fan, and they beat the Cardinals 7-1, but the Cardinals had already clinched the division, as did the Twins clinch the West, Cardinals clinched the NL East, and the Giants had already clinched the NL West. So one day left in the regular season, and as everyone knows, the Tigers won the last game. So the playoffs, the American League Championship Series was Tigers versus Twins, and the National League Championship Series was Giants versus Cardinals.
Glad we'll Kelly stupid that. Blue Jays didn't make it. And I don't know what's more depressing, the Orioles fan or the Mets fan, but anyway.
Well, the Orioles would be pretty bad in 1988, so don't worry.
Bad in 2018.
I have a Mets fan friend, and we have like a support society going right now.
D'Amato and I might need your number. So
I worked. Oh, Scott could actually. I don't know. He might still work there. Does Kevin Jackson still work there?
Yes, he does.
Okay, so he's a big Orioles fan. I remember like this guy in like when I was working there, like 2004. Like this is the year, you know, like every fucking year. This is that. Yeah. This is the year. You know, they'd always start hot. This is the year. This is the year. There was one year they started really hot. It was like 05 or something. I don't know when you jumped ship, Peter, but it was like 04, 05 or whatever when I was there. They started really, really hot, and he was just riding high. And then
yeah, 05, they were like 20-7 right out of the chute. And then by like the end of July, they fired the manager.
Yeah, that was the year because he was so diehard and flying high and just talking all kinds of shit. And I'm like, let's just wait a few months. And there
the dark ages. The dark ages of
still is. Has it
Orioles,
come out of the dark ages?
Yeah. Exactly. All right. Guess what it's time to do now?
Oh, boy.
Orioles baseball.
First, yes. The greatness that is Billy Ripken, a.k.a. And I'll say this, Peter, since you might be uncomfortable. Take the field!
I'm very excited about the switch to the NFL films. I mean, the ESPN music. I was down with the NFL films one.
No, this is good. I think it's a little refreshing.
Yeah, it's good. I'll mix it up.
You know? Well, 87 was when I think ESPN started doing games. So
right.
It is
very fitting.
Change your pace. Okay. All right. Of course, Mr. Nelson's not here. I have his picks. It is week 4 of the 1987 NFL season. And because Peter's here, that means the Scabs are playing.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's very fitting.
I am so excited for this. Unbelievable.
Because our regular Kelly's not here. The Scab is picking for... No, I'm only kidding, Peter.
So just to refresh, I defeated Kelly last week 10-8. So that's the season lead right now.
Okay. But you have to understand, JR, again, not the regular guys playing in these games.
All right,
so
I know. I got it.
I'm just letting you know.
You don't have to fucking mansplain to me what Scab players are. I get it.
Of course, just to recap, the first 2 weeks of the NFL season that year were normal. Then they walked at the end of week 2, which is what we had last week on the show. They skipped week 3, and this was week 4, but this was the third games of the season. And practically everybody was a Scab. So here
Shane
we go.
Shane Falco, can't wait.
All right. Yeah, half these teams wish they had Shane Falco. All right. We will begin, JR. Now, do you want me to give Kelly's – well, no.
No, just do his after Peter and I go, and then you give Kelly's.
Okay. All right, so the first game will go to the Silverdome in Pontiac, where the Lions host the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
All right, I'm going to go with the Lions in this one, Peter.
Okay, Peter?
I'm going to go with the Lions because the Bucs were always terrible back then.
Okay, Kelly took the Lions as well, and you're all wrong.
Oh, wow.
Scabs win, baby. Bucs take it, 31-27.
There goes my plan, just picking all the home teams.
So... All right, next, let's go to Riverfront Stadium in Cincinnati, where the Bengals host the San Diego Chargers. Peter?
I'd go with the San Diego Chargers in that one.
Okay.
JR. Yeah, I'm gonna take the Chargers, too, because the Bengals suck regardless. I'm going to assume Andy Dalton was somehow involved in this game. So.
He's probably like 3, but no.
As an embryo.
Kelly picked the Chargers as well, and they did win, 10-9.
Good.
So Chargers win in Cincinnati. Next, we'll go to RFK Stadium in Cincinnati again. RFK Stadium in our nation's capital. The Redskins hosting the St. Louis Cardinals, JR.
I'll go with the Skins at home. I'm going to go on the Shane Falco theory. The Washington team plays well during the Scab time.
Okay. Peter?
Washington for the same reasons.
Okay. Kelly also picked the Redskins. Some guy named Rupert threw for 334 yards. And
Rupert Murdoch.
Redskins win 28-21.
That's why NFL's on Fox now.
Yes. All right. Let's go to Rich Stadium in Buffalo. The Bills hosting the Indianapolis Colts, Peter.
I'm going to go with the Indianapolis Colts there.
Okay.
I'll take the Bills at home.
Okay. Kelly took the Bills also. Former Cowboy quarterback and always a Scab in our hearts, Gary Hogaboom threw for 259 yards. Bills are Colts win huge, 47-6.
Jesus.
Whoa. Over the Bills. So the Colts win. Let's go to that dumpster shithole, Fulton County Stadium in Atlanta with their dumpster
shithole. Stop saying Cincinnati.
You told me Cincinnati 3 times.
No, I keep saying Cincinnati. Well,
well when you say shithole, you automatically think Cincinnati. So.
Yeah, exactly. Well, this is no better. It's Atlanta. The Falcons, JR. The Falcons, JR, hosting the Pittsburgh Steelers.
I'm going to assume Nick Duke was in attendance even then. I'm going to go with the Steelers.
Okay. Peter?
I will go with the Atlanta Falcons.
Okay, Kelly took the Steelers as well, and they win 28-12. Right. Their quarterback, by the way,
Tommy Maddox,
scat named Steve Bono.
Oh,
a non-scab, of course, eventually playing for the 49ers. Let's go to the vet in Philly, where Brad's trash bag Eagles take on the Chicago Bears.
That's Brad's NFC Championship Super Bowl bound Philadelphia Eagles. Congrats, Bradford.
Whatever. So, Peter, Bears, Eagles.
I will go with the Bears because they were pretty good back then. And I'm going to assume that the Scabs were too.
Yeah, I'll go with the Bears too. Sorry, Brad.
Yeah, the Bears win big, 35-3.
Did Kelly have the Bears too?
Kelly had the Eagles, actually.
Good. Stupid Canadian.
So, there you go. Let's go to Foxborough, where your AFC champion, congrats, Cowboy, New England Patriots, host the Cleveland. Oh, no. You had to throw shade at the shit-piece Eagles. You're going to have to deal with it. Patriots hosting the Cleveland Browns, JR, at Foxborough.
I'll go with the Browns.
Okay. Peter?
I will go with the Patriots.
All right. Kelly went with the Pats as well. And just like we hope they do in 2 weeks, the Pats lose 20-10 to the Browns.
So you get for being such a fucking homer, like all the other Pats fans.
Let's go to the Superdome in New Orleans. The Saints hosting the Los Angeles Rams, JR.
The Saints sucked. I'm going to assume everything about them sucked during this whole time period. So we'll go with the Rams.
Okay. Peter?
Au contraire, I will go with the Saints there.
All right, so did Kelly, and the Saints win big. John Forcade.
Oh, I didn't know he was playing.
Yeah. He ended up being a regular player afterwards, too. 222 yards passing, Saints win 37-10. Let's go to the Hubert H. Humphrey Metrodome in Minneapolis, the Vikings hosting the Green Bay Packers, Peter.
I'm going to go with the Packers in this one.
Yeah, I'll go Green Bay, too.
All right.
For the Vikings.
Kelly took the Vikings. And the Packers win 23-16. Okay. All right. Let's go to Mile High Stadium in Denver. The Broncos host the Houston Oilers, JR.
Broncos at home.
Okay. Peter?
I will also go with the Broncos.
So did Kelly. However, Mike Peace, well, I remember this guy because he went to Florida, 260 yards passing. Oilers win big 40-10.
Jesus Christ.
Missing.
Give me these scab teams of throwing up 40 burgers in these games. It's crazy.
No, the scab defenses must have really been scabs.
I guess so. Fuck.
Let's go to the Kingdome in Seattle, where the Dolphins are taking on the Seattle Seahawks, Peter.
Well, there's no Dan Marino there for the Dolphins, and God knows who they got to replace him, so I'm going to go with the Seahawks.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll take Seattle.
So did Kelly, and the Seahawks did win 24-20. Let's go out to the Mausoleum in L.A., the Raiders hosting the Kansas City Chiefs, JR.
I only picked the Chiefs at home. I will go with the Raiders.
Okay. Kelly? Peter?
And I will go with the Kansas City Chiefs.
All right. Vince Evans, who seemed to have been on the Raiders for like 45 years, threw for 248 yards. The Raiders beat the Chiefs 35-17.
Who did Kelly have? He had the Raiders. I saw it this morning.
Yes, that's right. Kelly had the Raiders.
For some reason, you had Kelly send me his picks and as well as you. That's the only one I read, though. It's the only one I looked at because it was at the bottom.
I put it in the wrong chat. All right. And finally, JR, it would figure that our two teams would play in a scab week as the Jets host the Cowboys at the Meadowlands. What do you think, Peter?
This isn't one of those things where it ended in a tie, right? Like last time?
No, I would have said ahead of time there was at least one tie this week. There were no ties.
I'm going to go with the Jets in that one.
Yeah, I'll take gangrene, babe.
And no, you suck. Cowboys win 38-24, even though some guy named Norrie threw for 213 yards for the Jets. You might as well have kept. Well, I don't know. The Jets were pretty good after they
came out. Who did Kelly have? Scabs.
Kelly had the Jets as well.
Okay.
So, and finally, the Monday night game from the Meadowlands. So they just scraped the green off the end zones and slapped on some blue. The New York football Giants host the San Francisco 49ers.
Ooh,
Peter?
They must have been so mad. They must have been so mad that they had that game lined up from under their football.
I know. Yeah. I know, right?
San Francisco for that.
I'll take the Niners, too.
And as did Kelly, and the Niners did win 41-21. So there you go.
All right. Well, you know, so there's King.
So scab offenses were really good, and scab defenses were thoroughly scabby. Finally, quickly,
hang on. I got to get the updated standings. Jeez, move so fast.
You're leading, so.
Well, I got to update the fans who weren't keeping track. I had 9, Peter had 8, and Kelly, bringing up the rear as always, has 7. So the yearly standings for me and Kelly is 19-15 now. So I've opened up a 4-point lead. Peter with 8.
To be fair to Kelly, though, when you convert it into Canadian, it's 9.
It's a little closer.
7.
I don't think the Scabs needed the extra 10 yards in the end zone. I mean, yeah, a lot of 40 bomb, yeah, a lot of offense in this, which means the Scab defenses must have really been abysmal.
Those games were known for either being 10-7 or for being like absurdly high scoring, and yeah, people stopped going by like the third week.
It was literally like watching like the XFL or the USFL. Yeah. It was pretty much the USFL. Exactly. It was pretty much the USFL in NFL uniforms. Is pretty much what it was.
Yeah.
So, and finally, the AP Top 10 College Football Poll, which would have come out on the following Monday. Your number one team was Oklahoma still. 2-10, Nebraska, Miami, Notre Dame, Auburn, Florida State, LSU, Clemson, Ohio State, and Tennessee. Who's your college team, Peter? Holy Cross.
I can't say Boston College anymore, being a BU guy, but growing up, I was always a big Michigan fan. Yeah.
So you're a Terrier.
Yeah.
So you're I don't know.
I like watching Big Ten football. Yeah. Well, BU had a team then, and they had a team my freshman year, and I was actually the video guy for the football team. They went 1-10, and they canceled the program. So great impact that I had. I should have filmed the opposing sideline for some sake.
Bobby Boucher. There you go. The videographer Waterboy. There you go. Yeah. So there's our pop culture report, and back to the Scabs in Hershey. No, I'm only kidding. what do we got, JR? We head back to Hershey.
We do head back to Hershey as well. I lost my spot for a minute. I was going to take a minute though to troll Peter about Providence beating BU for the hockey championship a few years ago. Gene is with Paul Orndorff and Oliver Humperdinck as they talk about Paul's war on the Heenan family. Paul says he wasn't taking a second seat to anybody. And that was that. Oliver says Paul was tired of lying to the fans, and Paul said he's tired of lying to himself and associating with the brain, and he'll make the fat lady sing tonight. And that was a pretty funny line. Gene then with King Kong Bundy, who bullies Gene and says he's ready to defend the family. I don't think we've covered Sir Oliver Humperdinck just yet, right? I know we mentioned that he had won the services of Bam Bam Bigelow, but born John J. Sutton, good notes. On January 16, 1949, Minneapolis, in the early and mid-60s, Sutton began to get to know several wrestlers, working as an usher in Minneapolis. Eventually landed as a job as a security guard for the AWA, met Paul Vachon in 73, went to work for Grand Prix in Montreal. Sutton worked as a manager, an occasional wrestler, refereed for a time, was very sad, began managing the Hollywood Blondes after they split with the manager, Johnny Rougeau. Both Don Jardine and Dale Hay are credited with coming up with the name Sir Oliver Humperdinck. Jardine claims to have come up with the name, believing it would draw heat from Francophone fans. Francophone, is that how you pronounce that?
Yes.
Cool. In Quebec, who hated anything English. 1974, Sutton went to Florida Championship, putting an angle with Mike Graham, Kevin Sullivan. A couple years later, went to work with them again. In 1980, Sutton became Dusty Rhodes' servant for 30 days after protege Ivan Koloff lost a match to Rhodes during the 30 days. Lord Alfred Hayes began managing Sutton's proteges, such as Bobby Jaggers and Nikolai Volkoff. Humperdinck returned, became a figure of sympathy during his 30-day servitude, returned to management, attempted to claim back Jaggers, Hayes, and Volkoff, brutally beat on him, thus starting a feud with Michael Hayes. He worked for National Wrestling Alliance's Jim Crockett Promotions in the 1980s, managed Greg Valentine, Paul Jones, and the One Man Gang. Left in 83, returned 5 years later before the company was bought out by Ted Turner, became known as World Championship Wrestling, while in the NWA, formed a stable known as House of Humperdinck. As a singles wrestler, held the NWA Florida Heavyweight title, Central States TV Championship as well. In 1987, the WWF approached Sutton and offered him a job to come in as Oliver Humperdinck, manager of Bam Bam Bigelow, and now Paul Orndorff. And that is our next match, Paul Orndorff taking on King Kong Bundy. Orndorff still hanging around, now face again. Of course, he severed ties with Bobby Heenan, entering into another feud with him yet again. I feel like Orndorff goes into the circular feuds since he's debuted. He started as a heel, was kind of loosely associated with Bobby here and there with Piper. Goes face, feuds with Bobby, turns heel, goes back to Bobby, turns face, feuds with Bobby. And here we are again. He and his new manager, Oliver Humperdinck, hit the ring. Vince asks Bobby why he's in the booth and not at ringside, but Bobby won't give much info. Bundy stalks out slowly, as Bobby says he's in the booth for a reason. He tells Vince to leave him alone. Bobby rips Oliver as Orndorff unloads on Bundy at the bell, but misses the dropkick to turn the tide. Bundy kicks away and slings Paul to the corner. Paul comes back with chops, and Bundy chokes away and then leans all of his weight on him. Paul gets a sunset flip for two, but Bundy stays on top with hard strikes. Orndorff mounts a comeback, dragging Bundy's eyes across the top rope, gets two on an elbow to the head. Bobby stands up in the booth with concern and then heads to the ring. Paul continues to grab near falls as Andre the Giant marches to the ring, with Bobby coming back to the booth and bragging about his big surprise. Andre consults with Bundy on the floor, and it works as Bundy takes over the match with his weight and power. Paul then catches Bundy with his head down and buries a kick and unloads a flurry, but Bundy dodges an elbow drop and then punches away. Bundy slams Paul and drops a heavy knee for two and then goes to a chin lock. Bundy eventually misses an avalanche, but Paul punches away, and Andre was able to hook his tights and hold him in the corner as Bundy hits the avalanche for the win. Another solid match here tonight. Andre helping Bundy win was well done, I thought. A nice payoff to Bobby's big surprise that he kept hinting. Also a little surprised that they had Paul job. But it was clear cheating, and at this point, he is what he is, so, like, does it really matter? It's like he's going to dull his face turn. He is pretty much just Paul Orndorff. Great heat, Andre. Both men worked hard. Nice ebb and flow to prevent things from ever getting sluggish. I went 2 stars on this one, Peter.
Yeah, this was a pretty good one. I'm kind of surprised at how rejuvenated Bundy looked here.
Mm-hmm.
I do want to add for Humperdinck, like, I don't call him Oliver Humperdinck. I call him Oliver Humperdinck in the Technicolor Dreamcoat because of that just garish outfit that he wears.
It's tremendous. Like,
he's useless even by babyface manager standards. It's like if Red from Roadhouse decided instead of doing the hardware store, he wanted to go into, like, musical theater. It's like, what – I don't know – anyway, let me focus here. All right. So Bundy, this is actually the time that he started appearing in those computer ads for Head Start computers.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it was in, like, PC Magazine, like, the same week as this would have aired. And it was kind of interesting. I always thought it was strange how he kind of got a little bit of juice back. He has the match with, like, the Minis and Hillbilly Jim over mm-hmm. the summer. And now he's kind of back in the picture. I thought he was moving around pretty well. I liked Orndorff going for a sunset flip because I'm a huge mark for guys who try to do sunset flips on really fat guys. Tito Santana doing a sunset flip on Andre the Giant at that Survivor Series.
Great.
That
yeah,
one
yeah.
time is one of my favorite things ever. I have a GIF file and I watch it all the time. But Heenan here, you know, not going to the ring with Bundy, so you're like, huh. But Heenan, this is where he proves that he is a truly great manager, because unlike Buck Showalter in the 95 AL Division Series Game 5 or the 2016 AL Wildcard Game, he is going to go to his closer, Andre the Giant, and signals to the bullpen there. And I love this part of Andre's career where he's just the cooler slash closer
yeah.
of the
mm-hmm.
Heenan family. He's just standing there, cutting an imposing presence. He's even dressed nicely. He doesn't have this garish checker thing on here. It's a nice black suit. I really like how they found something nice for this guy to wear when, you know, you can't find anything to put him in. And he really exposed how useless Humperdinck was. So I like that as well. So, yeah, the way they played him off here, I think, was really good. I give this 2 stars.
By the way, to hear more about Andre the Giant this time period, listen to brand new Jeff Learns Wrestling, just dropped over the weekend. We looked at the 1988 Royal Rumble, and Jeff has Andre the Giant as his favorite, but that might be changing. So take a listen to that on the PlayStation Wrestling feed. Go ahead.
Was Jeff dressed garishly while he was watching it?
No, it's not.
Tremendous word, Peter. Twice in one analysis, garish. Yes, and Andre did always have – I actually got taken aback by seeing the sweet suit as well. But your analysis of him being the closer is perfect. It's like, all right, we got to get this done. Bring in the guy that we know will get it done, and out comes Andre. I thought that was just absolutely awesome. Great Bobby. Just sticking it to Vince, who was so annoying during this match. I gave it 2 stars. You know, with all the stuff I've watched on the network over the last, like, 6 months to a year, and that includes what we've been watching, JR, all the world class and Mid-South that I've been watching, I really am impressed with how King Kong Bundy has evolved as a worker. And he's, like, he might be one of my favorite big men ever. Just a great promo, and I can tell you, he moves around pretty well for a guy that big.
No, he's definitely a guy who's earned a lot of, like, gained a lot of steam in my eyes, like a honky through doing these shows. I mean, we talked a lot about it with the Colossal Jostle and all that stuff. But, you know, I agree with you. He's climbed. I mean, he ended up raising up in my GWWE project rankings higher than I anticipated from watching a lot of this stuff.
Yeah, me too. And, and as for Orndorff, he's just there at this point. I mean, we all know that there's a lot of guys on this roster that we, at this point, we realize are pretty cooked, and Orndorff's one of them. So he eats the pin. Who cares? It really doesn't matter. Bundy, not really either, but it's more, the match was, it's funny that a match was set to put over somebody not in the match, because it really was putting over Andre as just this force, you know? And, I agree with you, Peter. I think the dark suit, he almost comes out like a hitman, you know? Mm. It's pretty awesome. So great match. I liked it. 2 stars. And Bobby's family, even though they're beltless, they're almost maybe the most imposing faction, even more than Jimmy's guys, even though Jimmy's guys have all the belts.
Do you think – so I was actually going to ask that question. So let me phrase it this way, and you guys can both weigh in. do you think the running – shtick of burying Heenan for not having champions, is it diminishing him at all, or is it just kind of hokey face, you know, jokes? And on the flip side, do you think that Jimmy got all the belts because exactly what you said, Scott, that the Heenan family's more imposing and well built, and they felt that Jimmy's guys needed the belts more to get over, or did it just kind of all happen to just fall this way?
I think it just happened to fall that way, because did Heenan even have a tag team in early 87 before the Islanders joined the fold? Because
I don't think
at the time, at the time of the Hearts, when he wasn't even in that division, or he had no presence there. It's kind of all of his chips were to the center with Andre, and really wasn't focused anywhere else. And Jimmy kind of cleaned up on the other end of that. So I kind of see it that way.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it was a mixture of both, JR. I think, Bobby didn't have a tag team. I mean, it was Bundy and Stud. Stud's gone.
Right.
Right now, his stable is what? He has the Islanders. So.
Well, yeah, Peter was saying before that, though.
Yeah, no, you're right, Peter. He didn't before. He's only had the Islanders like a month, month and a half, I guess. 2 months. But, I do think that Bobby's guys, like Andre was just an opposing force. Bundy was an opposing force. The Islanders were a good team. Obviously, without the IC belt, hockey's just another flunky. And the Hart Foundation were going to be champions regardless of who was managing them anyway. So Jimmy just happened to be the guy managing them, but the Harts were due to be champions regardless. So I agree with Peter that I think it just happened that the guys who were in line to be champions just happened to be managed by Jimmy. Mm-hmm. But I think Bobby has the more imposing faction of guys, and I think they needed the belts more than Bobby's guys did at that time, and particularly Honky, because I don't think Honky would have as much heat, obviously, without the IC belt. And again, the Hart Foundation, they were due to be champions anyway. They were next in line, and Jimmy just happened to be managing them. So Bobby was going to be due soon. Right. Plus, there was going to be a fresh influx of guys. We've seen a few of them already, Rude and those kind of guys that were eventually going to need managers. And
in a way, too, it works. You know, like this guy is desperate for a title, and when he finally gets it, it's like such a big moment. So it's cool. I mean, it's fine that they build it this way. It seemed weird to me. They really harped on it a ton. Like Gorilla says it constantly. I mean, on these MSG shows, like he mentions it like every fucking match. Bobby doesn't have any champions.
Yeah.
And then Vince says it in the open too. So it's just it seems like an odd talking point to keep calling out. But I guess it was just looked at as like, you know, them busting on the heel. But it seemed weird to keep calling out that he doesn't manage any champs.
Yeah, no, I think it's more people needling. Bobby's so over. I don't think he loses anything. I think it's just needling him because he's easy to needle, and he's more important than Jimmy is at this time in terms of having guys. And I think the belts were more needed for him. So, all right. Speaking of Jimmy, his guys are up now.
Yeah, Gene's in the back with the Hart Foundation. He chastises them for their sneak attack earlier, and the Harts justify their actions and bitch about not having the manager for their match, and they are confident they'll win anyway. And that match up next is the Hart Foundation taking on the Young Stallions. That is Jim Powers and Paul Roma, officially a full-time team now with that name, and have some music called Crank It Up Bobby Heenan says they stole the song from Jimmy Hart. So that was kind of interesting. I knew they always used Crank It Up, and I knew Jimmy Hart made Crank It Up. Peter, did you know that that was part of the actual story? Like, did they ever say, like, was Jimmy made that song for somebody else? Like, how did they steal a song from him?
I think they just came out to it at one point on, like, a Superstars or something, and they and then Jimmy cried foul, and that was sort of that was just sort of the simple storyline there.
Okay. There you go. Of course, it was on the Piledriver album, of course.
Yep.
Surprised they didn't try and stick it with the Hart Foundation, that song, but it would not that it would fit them in anyway. But
no.
All right, the Harts head out next. Vince says he thinks it's the first time they defended the belts without having Jimmy Hart in the corner. Anvil and Roma start things off as Bobby says the Stallions have won a non-title match already. Roma dodges a charge in the corner, grabs the arm, and then tags Powers. He works the arm for a moment. Anvil clubs him down and tags Brett. Powers catches Brett coming in, and the Stallions work his arm as well. Powers gets two on a cross body, but Brett catches him with a knee to the gut to cut him down. Brett follows with a backbreaker and tags Anvil, clubs away. The Harts quick tag and double up to control Powers, keeping him pinned to the corner and abused. Powers escapes and tags Roma and the Stallions clean house, knocking Anvil outside with a double dropkick. Roma gets a power slam on Hart for a close near fall, but Anvil makes the save. As the ref is tied up with Powers, the Harts hit the Hart attack for the win. This was fine. But really too short to really mean much. It gets over the Harts that they'll cheat and work cohesively to win. Fine enough for the Stallions. They get a little rub on TV. But really nothing much going on here, Scott. Star and a half.
I gave it a star and a half as well. Typical end of show tag team fare. Obviously, they needed to keep this short because they had something that a couple of things left to do on the show. So they didn't want to finish the show off with this match. So they cut it off, you know, simply for that reason. The Harts are over, still the champs. A good, you know, TV fare. A good shot for Roma and Powers to have a TV match. No harm in that. They've had to carry the fucking shadows for the last 4 months on the house show circuit. So they kind of deserve to be able to face, like, a really good team for once instead of Cully and freaking Rivera. So at least they had the opportunity to wrestle, like, actual good wrestlers. Mm. Although Anvil could be questionable with Randy Cully. Who knows? But, they look fine. It was a good enough match, and it did go kind of quick. But again, we still have some stuff to do at the end of the show, so it's not like they really were given a lot of time anyway, Peter. But solid enough, and a win for the champs.
And I think Brett was really good here for what he was, you know, for the limited time that he was out there. Like I said earlier, right. I think 87 was a huge step forward for him, even though he's in this tag team. I mean, just having the belts, just being out there, because they were never really pushed, I don't think, until they actually got the belts. There was one part where Brett looked like he was going to come in and cheap shot as the ref had his back turned, but then the ref turned around and Brett thought better of it. And I thought that was kind of interesting, you know, him, Brett, showing the usual thought that I think that he puts into his matches. Not too much to say about Roma here, since I spent like 9 minutes talking about him on my podcast 2 weeks ago, and I'm kind of sick of him. But did you notice that Powers had like the worst wedgie for like 3 minutes in this match? It's like, it's like, how much ass of Jim Powers do we have to see?
What happens when your balls are so fucking tiny from steroid debuts? You know, everything just bundles up there.
That's why they had to go home so quickly, because it was going up the crack of Powers' butt.
He had to show off that back knee on his ass, you know?
Oh, yeah. But Brett would throw himself into that heart attack clothesline with like 120% effort and would really make kind of a simple move look like a true finisher. And the finish was a little strange to me. I'm willing to bet that Roma and Powers argued about this when they got backstage, because Powers didn't get out of the ring, and Roma ended up getting like visually pinned for like 10 seconds there, right? Because he's pinned, and then the referee, you know, saunters over and then makes the three count. So that didn't look too good, but I'm with you. Star and a half here. Brett was good. Everything else, so yeah, it is what it is.
I'm guessing I wanted to if they went home early, either because of the wedgie or not, but I'm thinking it seemed kind of rushed at the end. Like, it was really... you know, for a team that's getting a semi-push in the Stallions, they kind of get treated like fodder here. So it was kind of surprising how quick they moved through it. But this show had so much going on, they really didn't have time to waste. All right, we go backstage. Gene is with Hulk Hogan and Randy Savage. They tease shaking hands as they talk about trying to figure out what this all means. Hogan talks about realizing there was another universe out there, brother, along with the badness. Savage is in shock but he's past reckless abandon. Hulk opened his eyes with an endorsement, giving him some direction. Savage dubs them the Mega Powers. They officially shake hands with the official Mega Powers handshake. Hogan says they're going to go to the stratosphere and take over the WWF as a team. Any thoughts from either of you on this promo?
It was exceptional. The handshake is the handshake and will always be awesome. I'm very impressed with this dynamic of Hogan having a colleague or a running buddy, because we haven't seen that in this title run. So it was very unique and I dug it. I dug it. I was ready for this. I think Hogan was ready for it. I think even more for Savage, because Savage was over anyways, a babyface. I think this is even more important for Hogan to have like a guy to kind of run with and take care. You know, they take care of each other and that kind of thing. In terms of, you know, from other heels and. I think this is a big deal, Peter, for Hogan almost as much as Savage, because we haven't had Hogan have like an ally pretty much since Mr. T, you know?
Well, he's got to have some trust issues after what happened with Orndorff. I mean,
and Andre,
that's true.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, you think about the personalities of Orndorff and Savage, very similar, intense sort of dudes. So Hogan probably knows now to pick up the phone. If he gets a call at the
yes.
gym.
Yes.
Like the one part of this that stuck out to me again, going back to my point from earlier, is when Gene, you know, asked Savage, you know, how you doing? Like with, you know, have to get hit in the head with a guitar. Savage, I've never felt better. It's like, now, once again, Jake has got to be pissed about this.
Right. He's like, what the hell?
He gets hit in the head with a guitar. He's never felt better. I get hit in the head with a guitar and the rest of my life is ruined. What the hell?
Yeah. Right? So much could have been different if they switched those guitars. Who knows what could have went each way for them. Yeah. Okay. Any other thoughts there?
Nah.
Okay. No. Solid promo.
All right. Now I am going to turn right back to Peter, because I know this is something he's been dying to talk about.
I'm salivating.
We have the official premiere of the Pile Driver music video off Pile Driver the album. And Peter, I'm not even going to talk about it. I'm going to turn it over to you because I know you're dying to get into this.
All right. So this is clearly a babyface construction company here, because no heels are allowed on the job site.
Heels on my job site.
they wave Honky in there, and he's driving. Honky should have put the top up, because there's a big mistake by him, because he just gets dust in his car. Really just kind of a cardinal mistake by the Honky Tonk Man there. But the first thing that strikes me there is Hogan's pants with the light blue. I'm pretty sure he reused those in No Holds Barred when he's doing those when he's trying to mack it to Joan Severance at one point. I feel like I had seen those pants somewhere else. Then you get Arnold Skolin, and he's going to be in my crosshairs here because – first of all, he's the angry foreman of this crew here, and he's so useless. He's literally smoking a cigar on the job site, but he is actually doing more here than he did in 6 years of managing Bob Backlund, so maybe I shouldn't crap on him too much. Coco, you got to hand it to Coco, because he has a really good voice for, you know, a guy who's a professional wrestler, and it's certainly the best use of a sledgehammer by a WWF star that there ever would be. Nobody would ever top use of a sledgehammer. No matter what Triple H might have tried to do with it in the year 2000, he would never match up Coco with the sledgehammer on top of the scaffolding or wherever he was. And then you get the women walking through. And this here was just sexual harassment theater here. You got like Billy Graham throws up that weird white power symbol for some reason. You get the Vince. you get Vince doing the whoa thing.
Oh, God. And, yeah, where he looks at the – oh, that's awful.
And one of the women looked like Susan from Seinfeld, George's yes. fiancé there, which I thought was a little strange. Like, huh, you know, Heidi Swedberg, you know, but it's probably not her. There
could be,
but it possibly could be. It was interesting to see Billy Jerk Haynes there, because I was like, he's still there at this point, but I can't believe he made the cut for this job site. You'd have some unpredictable maniac like him, you know, there. He's liable to like chop everything down when somebody's not looking. But then, and this is the best part, of the whole deal when you get to the end. So they do plan it out properly. They go to the hot finish with Skolland, whatever, Captain Useless there, goes to the Porta John, and he's carrying a magazine with, like, women in bikinis in it. So literally Arnold Skolland is going into, like, the community Porta John, and he's going to beat off. Like, what in hell? I mean, what's good? So what they did to him, he had that coming, and it was just magnificent. Ugh, 6.5 stars for this. I cannot lavish enough praise on this.
But did it feel like an argument?
Oh.
Peter, we had this debate last week. Which album do you prefer, the wrestling album or Piledriver?
You know, when you guys were talking about it, I kind of thought about it myself, and I have to go with the wrestling album myself because, well, I actually have most of the songs on my iPod, and I like to listen to them. I think it's because the best songs are on Piledriver. You have Jive Soul Bro and Demolition as, like, the really, really top songs. But I kind of like the body of work on the wrestling album. Plus, it's a cooler album cover on the wrestling album, and I'm dying to try and find it because I have, like, a vinyl album display in my basement, and there's one spot open
just for that
for the wrestling album. It's going to go right next to Turnstiles by Billy Joel once I can get my hands on it. So
you're not a fan of Hulk Hogan's wispy look on the cover of Piledriver staring into your eyes?
I do feel like I'd be a little freaked out by it. I mean, I have U2's War up there already, so I already have a creepy kid staring at me right now. But so I don't really want Hogan staring at me. The interesting thing about the wrestling album cover is you have all those people there, and I was kind of playing Where's Waldo, but, like, where's Hogan? Hogan's not there in that group. Like, Savage, Liz, there's, like, all sorts of people, but you don't see Hogan anywhere in there. It's just there's more going on in that cover. So,
and for the ensemble piece, I mean, Land of 10,000 Dances kills. If you only knew, for sure.
It was the day that kayfabe died. Well, actually, they did separate them out, didn't they?
Yeah.
On the stage there. Yeah.
If you only knew.
I'm going to stretch up from here to New Jersey.
Good album, Turnstiles, by the way, Peter. Good call on that.
God.
Tremendous video.
Scott can't stand up now. You mentioned Billy Joel.
Oh, really? Would you rather I mention you too, or are you going to go on a fucking anti-YouTube rant to ruin the
show again? I thought you were going to ask me why I didn't get Nylon Curtain, because that's where the song Allentown is on. It's like that album cover looks like a Sue Grafton novel cover. You know?
It's either that or like a playbill for some Broadway show. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, at least at Turnstiles, you have like all the different people there, you know.
Yep. So,
yeah. Hangover version of Allentown is better than Billy Joel's, anyway.
Anyway. A great video. Vince was like, just didn't belong. He looked like the creepy pervert guy. Hey, guys, can I hang out with you at the construction site? It's like, just didn't belong. It classic video. Hogan being a jerk by pouring all the concrete on on Skolland.
He had it coming.
Yeah, and then he had it coming in the John apparently.
Oh, yeah.
All right. We wrap up the show. Bobby Heenan brags about his Andre the Giant surprise, and we wrap up for the night. So why don't we go ahead and do our awards? Best erection will not be one of them. Arnold Skolland or Scott Criscolo anyway. Talking Billy Joel. Your choice. All right, our match of the night, I think it's a repeat of last week. I'm going with Randy Savage and the Honky Tonk Man.
Yeah, no, easily top match.
Yep. Yeah, Savage Honky.
All right, the Cousin Junior, the worst match of the night. I didn't think we had like a clear-cut option here, but just based on star ratings alone, I went Heart Foundation Stallions. But, I mean, that wasn't even that bad of a match. So pretty good quality overall here. You guys agree with that one?
Mm-hmm.
Worst match, I'm actually going to go Hogan-Sika, even though it's one of my favorite bad matches ever because of the commentary.
Okay.
Because of the nerve hold, too. I mean, that was bad even by nerve hold standards.
It was
super grabbing lazy. His boob and, yeah, nothing.
Yeah, right. I go with the Stallions and Hearts, too. Only because it was too short and they kind of, like, rushed through it to get to these last two parts.
Right. All right, the Hogan Award for MVP. I kind of feel bad because this is going to be the second week in a row I kind of hose Honky, but I'm going with Macho Man. As much as I liked Honky in that match, Savage is just a glue for everything. And then when you factor in the handshake and the stuff with Hogan, I think it was just his night. So that's my choice. What do you think, Peter?
I agree.
All right, Scott, you agree, Peter?
Yes.
Actually, I'm going to give it to Honky under the same thing where Karl Malone won the NBA MVP over Jordan that time. It's like, Savage, you're going to have plenty of chances in the future. Your future's pretty bright. But Honky, this is absolute peak Honky right now. And as I've said, Honky is my father's favorite wrestler of all time. So, you know, I'll hand it to him.
All right. No, I mean, it's close. Honky's been great. I mean, this is really almost like the fourth in a row where he could have won. Like, we gave it to him in July. He could have maybe won it in August. He could have won it in September in here. So he's been on a great four-month run. All right, Uncle Elmer for the least, basically the LVP, worst work of the night. I think this was an easy call for Sika.
Yeah, he was just, like, flopping around. He was a mess. I'm surprised Hogan worked him as good as he could have.
So I can't vote for Scotland here? No, because that was pre-recorded. Yeah, it's got to be Sika here.
Yeah, Sika was awful. All right, let's go with our best moment of the evening. And I went with the Honky Savage post-match stuff.
I was going to specifically go with the guitar shot itself, but I'll go with the whole thing, yeah.
Yeah, the whole everything.
The whole everything was great. Although Andre holding Orndorff's tights back was pretty awesome too, but not as good as the stuff in the beginning.
As much as I love Vince calling Sika a consummate savage, got to go with the post-match Honky and Savage.
All right, and our CD award for the most juiced of the evening. Sadly, no Morocco here tonight.
Everybody on the construction site?
Well, Morocco was on the job site, and he wasn't getting that shirt off for a while.
He was. We'll go with who was live, though. Well, I thought Jim Powers gave a little bit of a run. I mean, Hogan's still the biggest of anyone that was actually, like, in the studio. I mean, if you were going to the job site, you could fucking talk about Graham, Morocco, Haynes. I mean, they were all fucking juiced. But I'll go with Hogan for guys that actually competed or were on TV.
I'm actually going to go with Jim Powers here because Hogan looked I don't know if it was my imagination, but Hogan looked a little bit smaller to me for some reason. I don't know if it was noticing the knee brace and maybe the fact that maybe he's a little bit more mortal here, but yeah, Jim Powers, I think.
You know, I'll go with Powers. I can get behind that. He was massive in this one.
Yeah.
What do you think, Scott?
Maybe it was his big steroided wedgie. No, Powers was looking pretty. And Roma always kind of looks juiced, but
yeah.
I'll go with Powers here.
Okay. All right, and final score out of 10. This is a really, obviously, really good Saturday Night's Main Event. The first half of it was red hot. The back end slows up just a bit, but I mean, Orndorff Bundy's still really good, so it doesn't slow up that much. And then you get the mega powers at the end. I went a 7 back in May. I really like that show, and I really like this one. So I'm going to go 7 out of 10 for the Saturday Night's Main Event. Honestly, we're on a run of 7s. That's been my grade since like the last 4 of these things, so I thought they've all been that good. 7 out of 10, Peter.
I'm going to go 8 out of 10, which might be super strong here, but just the quality of the angle with Savage and Honky, not only for the present, but what it might lead to in the future. The Andre thing was very well done there. You get, you know, Hogan, it was really just sort of a filler match. With the Hearts, I mean, it's nice to get them out there. I get to see Brett. And, you know, maybe I'm a little bit high on that, but I think that angle was just simply so awesome that it does make it one of the best Saturday Night Main Events to date. And it's going to be very hard for any future shows to top it, in my opinion, anyway.
All right, Scott.
I'm going to split the difference with you. I'll go 7.5. I thought the first half of the show was some of the best stuff we've watched all year.
Mm-hmm.
It makes me realize how great the year has been in terms of in-ring. And it's just an epic moment because really they're the two hottest guys in the company at the moment, Hogan and Savage. And it only made sense to start having them work together. I have to give a lot of props to the Hershey crowd. They were red hot on this night. And and they had to have another Dino Bravo draw before the show. So surprised they had any juice. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. Saturday's Main Event's just been red hot this year. I mean, I gave the first one a 6.5. I gave the one before Mania a 6. And I gave the one in May a 7.5. So it's been a great year for Saturday Night's Main Event. It really has. we get a good run for the next couple of years. It really isn't a bad one. And, you know, even though it's on national TV, and we talked about how it, usually these shows are in a vacuum, this is a big deal because we're going to ride with this for a while. Usually something this huge doesn't start immediately with on Saturday's main event, but it is tonight. It's a big deal, the Hogan Savage thing. And we're going to see it continue. So great show. And 7.5, I think, is pretty generous, even though the last two matches were the Hogan stuff and the Andre stuff to me with Savage was a big deal. And we're heading into the end of the year, which is usually the time of the year where things are a little shaky. But we're heading into some hot stuff here. Big deal. 7.5 for me.
For sure. All right. There you have it. Another great show in the books. Scott, you got a main event coming up this week or what's going on?
We do. We do indeed. A big show this week. We will be previewing this coming weekend, of course, JR. We'll be previewing NXT TakeOver and, of course, the Royal Rumble. And we will be recapping the, as we do our classic TNA pay-per-view recaps, the second ever TNA pay-per-view from June 26th, 2002, which has the first huge moment for one of the greatest TNA guys of all time, who's obviously in WWE right now. Kind of tip my hat there. But so a big episode this week. Nate, little Steve, little Aaron, your boy. So good show coming up this week on Main Event.
All right. Can't wait. Peter, spin some Greetings from Allentown yarns for us. What's going on there?
All right. Greetings from Allentown. The episode that is out now is the episode of Superstars from June 13th, 1987, where the Honky Tonk Man won the Intercontinental title from
Synergy.
Ricky Steamboat. Yes, exactly. That is
big
exactly
time.
Why I got a lucky break that it got posted on YouTube like 2 weeks beforehand. So that was nice. And then coming out this Thursday on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, I'll be taking a look at CWA Memphis Wrestling for the first time from April 1st, 1989. And it is no April Fool's joke that you're going to be seeing before they were famous. The likes of Scott Steiner, Sid Vicious, The Undertaker, and many more. All in Memphis. This show had kind of a Memphis flavor at the beginning, so I feel like it was appropriate to dive in for episode number 50 of Greetings from Allentown. So do check it out on the Pro Wrestling Only feed.
Do that. It's an excellent show. You're missing out if you aren't listening. I mentioned before, new Jeff Learns Wrestling dropped over the weekend, looking at Royal Rumble 1988 as we careen toward WrestleMania 4. And it's going to be interesting as we get to 4 because we're now reaching some stuff that Jeff watched back in the first episode and we're going to revisit. So we'll see how his takes have evolved now that he's seen more wrestling, understands more than he did at the time. So we'll see that as we move forward. Check that out. Of course, our PTBN Greatest Dirty Wrestler Ever project rolls along. The honorable mentions are still dropping. We're getting close to the top 100, though. We had numbers, I think we're up to, what the fuck dropped today? Do you know, Scott? Was it 150?
175 to 150.
Yeah, okay, that dropped today. So we got a couple more chunks of these things to drop before we get to the top 100. So remember, everyone who got at least one vote is being recognized here with a post. Been a lot of fun to do. So we should be, of course, rolling through this over the next few weeks. And the podcast audio will be dropping as well as we all start to reveal our personal lists. So check that out. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/placetobenation. Twitter, place2benation. Instagram and Tumblr. Next week, we are off. We, of course, will be returning from Philadelphia for Royal Rumble weekend. I'm going to take that week off. We'll be back in 2 weeks looking at the October 87 house show with another brand new Place to Be Nation guest who's never appeared on the show at all. So we're looking forward to that. Him on here. That'll be a lot of fun. I think many of you will know him, but it'll be cool. Another debut. Of course, if you're going to be in Philadelphia and you have not reached out to us yet and you have not been involved in the planning yet, let us know. We're going to have a little gathering on Saturday before NXT. We're going to find a local bar somewhere downtown Philly and gather for some drinks and some food before we head over to NXT at the Wachovia Center. So be sure to reach out to us if you're going to be around and want to take part. All right. So for Peter, I'm Justin. That's Scott. We're out. Talk to you in 2 weeks' time. Everyone enjoy the Rumble. Enjoy your week. Talk to you then. Take care. No wedgies.
No wedgies. Big Johnny. You make a little sound of the romance. But sometimes love sounds like a fight. It sounds like an argument. It sounds just like a power driver. Yeah.
It feels like a great big mistake.